Welcome to the Happy Menopause Podcast with me, Jackie Lynch, nutritionist and founder of the Well 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 Nutrition Clinic, where I specialise in women's health and the menopause. There are multiple ways that diet and lifestyle can support you through the challenges of midlife. And my latest book, The Happy Menopause, Smart Nutrition to Help You Flourish, is packed with all my best nutritional advice to help you tailor your diet to your menopause symptoms. Join me and my expert guests on a journey through midlife in this podcast and find out how you can have a healthy and happy menopause. Are you a sloucher? Do you spend too much time pinned to your desk? Have you started to get a few niggles in your lower back, neck or shoulders? If it's yes to all of the above, today's episode is the one for you, because it's all about posture, movement and alignment. And it's packed with practical advice to help with all those lurking issues you may have been ignoring or simply putting up with. But first I'd like to give a quick shout out to my sponsor, Better You, who make it possible for me to produce this podcast. We need optimum levels of vitamin D to absorb the calcium, which keeps our bones strong and healthy. And that's why a supplement really is a non-negotiable for women in midlife. Vitamin D also plays a key role in supporting immune function, protecting against infection, and it can influence our mood and mental health too. I'm a big fan of the Better You Vitamin D oral sprays, which include products suitable for all the family that are very simple to use and with a delicious peppermint flavour. Discover their full range of vitamin and mineral sprays and their wonderfully calming magnesium products, which come as lotions, bath salts and skin sprays, by visiting betteryou.com/THM, where listeners can get 20% off at checkout using the code THM, subject to terms and conditions. So that's betteryou.com/THM, plus the discount code THM, which stands for the Happy Menopause. Nice and easy to remember. And so on to today's episode. My guest is Kerri-Ann Bradley, former economist turned expert Pilates teacher. It was her own experience of too much time at a desk and the subsequent problems with sciatica and other aches and pains that led her to take up Pilates. She was so inspired by the results that she retrained with the renowned Fletcher Pilates School and became a teacher herself. She's the founder of the brilliant Pilates at Your Desk and Move More at Your Desk programmes, including an excellent book of the same name. There's not much Kerri-Ann doesn't know about movement and alignment. In fact, she's about to put me through my paces. So keep listening and please join in the fun. Welcome to the Happy Menopause, Kerri-Ann.
Hello.
I'm so pleased you're joining me today because I think this is a very important topic and I'm very much looking forward on a personal level and finding out everything you can tell us about making our posture and our alignment all better. But before we get into all of that, what's your story? How did it lead to where you are today?
I actually started off as an economist and I did that for almost 10 years, I think.
What did you study?
I studied economics as an undergrad and then I did a postgrad in competition law, economics for competition law. So
oh, wow.
I worked in the field of regulation and competition. Yes. And as interesting as it is, along with it came a whole list of desk-related aches and pains. I started to go to a Pilates class. Actually, I started going to Pilates after I had my daughter, but then I started again when I was working in Waterloo, actually, in London.
So how old were you then?
I think I've been teaching for about 9 years and I'm 40. So let's say I was like 30 or just before. I had my daughter when I was 27. So let's say 29, 30 is when I started going to the class.
Yeah. Had you always been interested in exercise and movement, or was it something that really came from your aches and pains?
So in my head, I was interested in exercise and movement, but that was kind of like, you know, join a gym for like 2 seconds, go to 100 classes and then stop. Like go run for a week and then stop.
I think most people know that feeling.
Exactly. But when I started Pilates, I thought, oh, I quite like this. I can do this. This is manageable. And then I was going quite a lot.
And was it helping your aches and pains?
Yes, it definitely was. But I will say that I think, and this is one thing that I really try to convey in my teaching, I think if there's a disconnect between the stuff that you do when you're in the class and then how that translates to how you go about your day to day, then you don't see a massive difference in how your body feels. That was my own personal experience. That won't be true for everyone. So definitely when I'm teaching, I try to show how that translates into everyday life so that the changes people experience in the class, they then translate into their walking, running, sitting, and so on. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So what sort of aches and pains were you getting from being stuck at a desk?
Well, I had sciatica, so pains going down one side of my body. I used to travel quite a bit way back from Birmingham to London. I was living in Birmingham. This is before I had my daughter, actually. And I carried a massive, heavy laptop on one shoulder. I was leaning on one side quite a lot of the time. So I had sciatica. I had quite bad neck pain as well. I've got a bit of scoliosis, so a slight S shape of the spine. Neck pain, headaches. And I also had random knee pain quite often as well. So I'm quite a fidget and I can hold my body in kind of strange positions. I used to call myself, well, in fact, I still do, a cross between a pretzel where I'd wrap my legs around each other and a croissant where I'd tuck my bum under and round through my back. That's how that would be my preferred way of sitting. I was working at a desk. So that sort of illustrates quite nicely how I used to hold my body.
Right. So yeah. How did you sort of make the leap from the day job to focusing on Pilates full time? How did that come about?
Primarily, it was because the lady that ran the studio sort of sweet talked me into joining her course, played to my ego. But in hindsight, I'm really happy she did because I wanted to get out of the field that I was in anyway. And so I was sort of on this mission of avidly searching for new things to do. And I just hadn't really found anything. Took the leap, quit my job and went to train with her. And it was a big course. It was, I think the course was like 8-9 months, something like that. And I was in the studio every day. But I still hadn't in my mind decided that that's what I would do after I'd finished. But then actually what was quite amazing was when I started working with bodies, so case studies, I realized that I knew all this stuff about bodies because I think I'd spent a lot of time just watching people and intuitively learning, I suppose, about their movement patterns and how that then might translate into aches and pains or postural quirks, I suppose you could call it. And so then I was hooked. I was like, wow, I've got a knack for this stuff.
And so you found that you were able to make a difference to people quite early on.
Yeah. It was really cool, actually. Yeah. Made a difference to how people felt instantly. And then also, obviously, doing the exercise itself, then over time, I began to, well, see the benefits for myself. I didn't have any aches and pains anymore. Way more energy. Just feeling generally a lot better in myself. And I guess it's probably a little bit linked into how I felt because I'm quite passionate about movement and about my job. But also I think the fact that I could stand taller and did great things for my confidence as well. So not just in terms of owning what I was doing, but also physically as well.
Yeah. So you went on to found Pilates at Your Desk. So, you know, what does an average week look like for you?
Pilates at Your Desk came a few years after I started teaching Pilates.
Okay.
And I started Pilates at Your Desk before lockdown, but in lockdown was when it really took off because obviously everyone went from being in the office space to being completely at home. And for some people, they moved a lot more actually, and for some they moved a lot less. So an average week now would look like I probably teach around 20 one-to-ones a week, mostly online. So that's not Pilates at Your Desk. That's my, I call it Pilates at Carrie Ann, but you know, I don't advertise it really because I've been working with these people for a number of years and sometimes I'll get people just coming through because they've hurt themselves so that's that. And then I have a membership, which is part of Pilates at Your Desk, and I have a number of companies that are signed up to that. So I probably teach six live classes for that a week. And then maybe 3 to 4 Pilates at Your Desk workshops, sometimes online, sometimes out and about. last week.
That's a full-on week of Pilates. Goodness me.
Yeah.
Let's start with the basics. What actually is Pilates?
It depends how you look at it. It's a set of 34 mat-based exercises. It's a routine, I suppose, is how you can look at it, one interpretation of it. And then there are different types of equipment then that have their own set of exercises on as well, which the sort of reason behind the equipment is to make you do the exercises better. But for me, yes, that it's a routine, but I'm not much of a routine kind of girl. So actually, I don't follow the strict pattern of the exercises. For me, it's more about the principles that underpin the movement. So it's essentially a few principles which in their entirety produce good movement. And I think of it, and I think for me, the overarching, I guess, umbrella would be balance. And that's in terms of your body, really. So about creating balance through the body, whether that be the front and back, the top and bottom, the left and right. And that's why then you might hear people talking about the core, because that's in the middle. If you said, what's Pilates? Oh, it's about core strength, which on another level it is. So it depends how you look at it. But for me, it's definitely about the principles of Pilates, which then mean you can do any type of movement as long as you do it well. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So is it very much fundamentally still what the original founder, Joseph Pilates, intended, or do you think it's evolved?
Well, that's a good question. I suppose it depends where you do your training and then what happens after you do your training. So I learnt with Fletcher Pilates. Ron Fletcher, he was one of Joseph Pilates' students. His form of Pilates, as it were, is very true to the original style. Mm. That often gets called classical Pilates. There are many different types of Pilates these days, which look less and less like the original form. However, that's just the evolution of the practice, I suppose.
I mean, I've certainly done lots of Pilates over the years, and it can vary enormously. You know, sometimes you'll do these random Pilates classes at the gym, which bear no resemblance to an entirely different Pilates class I might have done at another time. I mean, if you're looking for a Pilates teacher, how do you know that it's somebody who's, you know, had the proper training?
Well, usually they would talk about it on their websites, I would assume, because we're encouraged to do that. You just check that they have insurance as well. And then I suppose if you give it a try, different teachers speak to different people. It depends on the type of learner you are as well. For me, as I say, I'm less of a, here are the 34 exercises. We do each one 6 times and I'm not really about the counting. I'm more about the technique. So I will go around the class correcting people to try to help them with their alignment. And because I truly believe if you execute the exercises from a place of good alignment, then that's going to be more beneficial to you when you go about your day to day. And as I said earlier, I also like to then help you to translate that. So, yeah.
Okay. So why do we get aches and pains if we sit at our desk for too long?
There are a number of factors to think about, really. First and foremost is that we tend to have a preferred way of sitting and we'll stay like that for the majority of our sitting time and we won't move. There's a great quote that says, your next posture is your best posture, which essentially means moving in and out of positions. Mm. So if you hold any position or you do any movement on a repetitive basis, you're going to become out of balance. Again, it goes back to balance. So if you're moving in and out of position and taking your body into the opposite places from that which it's in when you're typing, for example, then you're going to be moving closer to balance rather than further away. So I think that's one reason why you get aches and pains. Also, stress plays a massive role. Holding your breath while you're working. Quite often, also, some of the ways in which people hold themselves. So, for example, if you're a leg crosser, you may then end
up... Just done crossing my legs now.
I can see that you cross your right over your left. So...
Oh my goodness, she can only see my head and shoulders. That's scary.
Well, this is how I do my postural assessments when I work. For you, Jackie, you lean on your left side. So if you look down at your knees, I would assume that your left knee is a bit more forward than your right knee right now.
Right. Okay, I'm just adjusting that.
And then your pelvis is more aligned at the back. because you've shifted your knee back. And so sometimes it can simply be that you're just leaning on one side more than the other. And then that, then your brain sort of forms information about that, that that's how your body likes to be in space. So then when you walk and stand still, you're more likely to lean on that side as well. So sometimes it's just a small adjustment that has to happen, coupled with more movement, that can make a massive difference. Because of course, you've got some people, myself included, who are massive fidgets. So
right.
You know, to a certain extent, you could say I move quite a lot, but I will move from a place that's already a little bit wonky, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I see. So, I mean, we all know that sort of movement and alignment are really important, particularly as we get a bit older. And as we go through menopause, of course, you know, the drop in estrogen means that, you know, there's more likely to be general aches and pains. So it's very important that we do move. And I think most of us know we should move more. But what are the barriers to this? I mean, when you're working with your clients, what do you observe as the key barriers to people moving more? And how do you help them overcome that?
So I think time is a massive one, because people think they don't have enough time to move. Yes, I run a lot of classes, actually, which are either 45 minutes or an hour. But I don't absolutely do not believe that that should be the end of your movement, because I think we should be moving in and out of positions throughout the day. So I think it's about changing your mindset, not thinking of it as I don't have enough time, thinking of it as I'm going to move while I'm waiting, or I'm going to move as part of something else that I do, you know, so
Yeah. Taking
it and not letting time be a barrier. Another major barrier is not knowing what to do and not knowing what's safe. And that's where you get a teacher who knows, and you get someone to block you. You buy into a person knowing that they know what they're doing, and therefore they will teach you in a safe way.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, and this is a major one, and it's one which, you know, I see a lot, is that people think you're only doing a good job if you are doing things which make you completely out of breath or completely ache the next day. And yeah, you know, there's merit in having some degree of feeling it the next day. But quite often we are unable to distinguish between muscle ache and having just moved your body in the wrong way or from the wrong place.
Right.
So, like part of like using weights, for example, something that I'm super keen on sort of teaching people is where you move your arms and your legs from when you're lifting or when you're doing your exercises, so that you're not playing too much into your joints or overusing certain body parts. Because obviously you've got long levers, so you need to try to work out where to move those body bits from. So moving in a way which is beneficial rather than potentially not. Yeah.
Right. That's really helpful. Now, some of the listeners will know that we put some questions out on Instagram just to see what themes people are keen to work on, because Kerri-Anne's going to take us through some movements now that we can do at our desk to support various areas. Now, it's my podcast, so my question goes first. And also, this is something a couple of people mentioned anyway. I have a real issue, I think, with my shoulders drooping forward, obviously hunched over a laptop a lot of the time, can cause my neck to ache quite a bit. And I've recently noticed, which to my horror, when I'm walking, probably because I'm always in a bit of a hurry as well, I'm actually sort of leaning forward as I walk, and I'm having to sort of readjust my posture so that I'm standing straight and not sort of leaning at a slight angle. So I'm assuming that's probably because my shoulders have got used to hunching forward as part of this desk business. So what have you got to say? What can we do?
So there's quite a few things to unpick there. First of all, go for the last thing, the walking forward. Most of our lives are geared to going forward, just generally, as well as physically. So your heels are your best friend. So when you're walking, make sure that you feel your heel ball toes on each foot, because I suspect you walk quite far forward in your feet because you're used to having body weight forward. So if you feel your heel connection, then that not only keeps you back, but it also will mean that you'll use the back of your legs more. In terms of exactly. So if you just do it now, Jackie, and anyone else who's listening, if you're still, if you press down through your heels and then release them and press down, can you feel it wakes the back of your legs up?
Yes.
Yeah. So there you go. So that's like a really neat trick, and you can be doing that when you're at your desk. with regards to the shoulders and the head alignment, if you, as best as possible, if you can have devices and so on at eye height, then that means you don't have to look down so much. In the event that you do have to look down, if you nod from your ears rather than from the base of your neck, you'll feel a bit of a neck stretch, but also it means that the weight of your head is further back. Head's a heavy business. So if you bend from the base of the neck, the weight of the head is forward, which brings everything forward. Does that make sense?
And is that why you get that sort of, you know, yes, tight, aching neck?
Yes. One reason, though, there are various inputs into these things. With the tight top shoulders, there are a number of things that you could do. You could practice breathing breaks throughout the day. So short, maybe a couple of minutes or so, hand on belly, other one on chest, and thinking of taking deep diaphragmatic breaths. Sometimes tension in the tops of the shoulders can be because we are not utilizing our breathing apparatus as best as we can. That could help with that. You look like you're a bit of a jaw clencher as well, Jackie.
I really am. That's shocking. Yes. I'm terrified that you know so much about me already.
Well,
I'm a teeth grinder as well on a bad night.
So breathing breaks will be really good for that. But also when you jaw clench, the neck muscles can be quite tight as well. So that would add into that tension.
So what sort of movements should I be doing at my desk to make sure that my shoulders aren't sort of hunching forward and so on?
Yeah. So some simple ones, shoulder rolls. So if you do tiny little shoulder rolls, but I want you to really think about the shoulder rolls happening at the shoulder blades rather than at the tops of the shoulders. So just do it. If you can focus on the shoulder blades moving, then that gets that whole middle back area moving.
Yes, I can feel it in my back by doing that.
Yeah, nice. And then go the other way as well. Yeah, good. Keep them really small. Otherwise, the top bits of the traps get involved. Here, we're sort of mobilizing the lower part of that muscle. Yeah.
Right.
Other things that you can do, simple head turns. So turning your head side to side while keeping your shoulders really still. And again, think about the head turning from the opposite shoulder blade. So again, you are mobilizing a different part of that muscle. Breathing, again, best friend for that particular area. And then an amazing exercise, which I'm a massive fan of because it stretches the chest while strengthening the area between the shoulder blades, is one where you bring your arms up into a cactus arm position. So like a three-pronged cactus. Yeah, nice. And then from there, you can bring your arms to touch in front of your face, so your hands face you, and then open them out to the side. And then we're gonna make it a bit more interesting, actually. So reach your arms up to the ceiling like a high V, lift your shoulders up, pull your shoulders down, and then bend your arms back to your cactus, and then bring them back in front of your face. So you can do that one, and that gets that whole area moving. So up with the arms.
Can you repeat that all over again for people who are listening, because it's easier for me because I can see you?
So bring your arms up into a cactus arm position, which is like a three-pronged cactus. Your arms are at a right angle, fingers pointing up to the ceiling. Then you bring your arms to close in front of your face, palms facing you, and then you open them back out to the side and your elbows are in line with your shoulders. If you now reach your arms up to the ceiling in a high V, lift your shoulders up to your ears, so your shoulder blades go up. Let your shoulders go down away from your ears and then bend your elbows so you've got that right angle again in line with your shoulders. And then you just repeat that.
That is great. And I mean, if you're a bit shy about doing that in the office, you can at least do that when you're working at home and you're not moving away from your desk much. And the other things you've suggested already are things that people wouldn't really notice, you know, the shoulder rolls, the neck and head turning. Okay, brilliant. One of the other popular themes that came up in the questions was lower back pain. So what can we do at our desk to help with that?
It depends what's giving rise to the lower back pain. If it's a disc issue, then you'd want to get it checked out if you think it's anything more than muscular. If it's muscular, then simple spinal movements can help. But also, sometimes it can be because the bits above it, so the rib cage and or the pelvis, aren't moving as much as they could, and the lower back is doing too much movement. So we'll go for that bit first. So with the ribs, anything that gets your rib cage moving, so the cactus arm thing that you just did, that's good.
Right. Okay.
Anything as well, fab. for your pelvis, you want to move at the base of the pelvis more, so the top of the pelvis, the lower back, doesn't have to do all the work. So if you pop your hands on your knees for me,
yeah,
and you're sitting up on your sitting bones, which are the bones at the bottom of your bum, and then hinge forward, so you go to the front of the sit bones, and you'll feel them separate.
Mm-hmm.
And then go back to vertical. Now, this is a squat, essentially. It's just a seated version. And you can do that a few times. That gets your body moving from a different place, which helps if you bend down, stuff like that. But it also gives your brain information about that being an alternative movement option.
Right. Okay. So repeat it again for us. Hands on your knees.
Hands on your knees. And then you're pressing down through your sit bones, but you hinge forward. So you're coming forward. So you go to the front of the sit bones and you'll feel them moving apart from each other.
Yeah.
And then come back up to vertical and they'll go back to where they were. So you're hinging forward and then coming back up. This is really good, by the way, for anyone with sciatica, because it really, really helps
Excellent.
To stretch the muscles.
And the nice thing is, again, it's quite a subtle movement.
Yes.
So you could do this in the office and nobody would even notice what you were doing. And I know that's something that some people would, you know, would be worrying about otherwise.
Shall I show you another great one, actually, which also feeds into that, but also gets your lower tummy working a little bit. So it might get a tick too. If you're sitting up on your sit bones and then from your sit bones, if you tilt your pelvis under, so your pubic bone goes towards your belly button.
Yeah.
And then roll back on top of your sit bones. So it's just a tiny weeny pelvic tilt and you'll feel your lower belly go in a little bit.
I've never done that sitting down. You do it a lot on your back, don't you, in Pilates and yoga. But no, interesting. Can you repeat it again just so everyone can have another go?
Yeah, so sitting up on your sitting bones, you're going to tilt the pelvis under so the pubic bone goes towards the belly button and your lower back lengthens and then you roll back onto your up on top of the sit bones. As you tilt the pelvis under pubic bone towards the belly button, your lower belly goes in, you'll feel it engage a little bit, and then rolling back up onto your sit bones. So that's a really discreet one, actually, that's quite effective, and it helps to lengthen the lower back. In terms of mobilizing your lower back, I would say your two best friends are side bends and rotations.
Right.
Yep. So with a side bend, we don't really do that much in real life. So it's a really good one to do, actually. So if you just put your hands on your knees.
Yep.
And then reach your left arm up above your head. Yep. And now you're going to side bend over towards your right, but keep your left sit bone down.
Right. Okay.
Nice. Good. And then you can cartwheel your arms up and over to the other side. So your right arm goes up to your ear. And then you go over, keep your right sit bone down.
Yeah. It is down. How do you know it's not down?
Down 100%. And then go to the other side. So this is a really lovely one because this one stretches the side waist.
Yeah.
And also strengthens it too on the way back up. So rotation, really discreet, perfect for the office, hands on the knees.
Right.
You're just going to slide your right arm up your leg as you rotate to the right and look over your shoulder.
Oh, as if you were just looking at a colleague.
Yeah. And then slide your left arm up your leg and look over your left shoulder. And then coming back. Now, you get extra points if, as you rotate, you think about getting longer. So you're creating more space for the rotation to happen. Nice. Yeah, that's really good.
It feels very nice. I like that one. I can really feel it making a difference.
Exactly. Yeah.
Excellent. And then the last one that came through was questions about hamstrings and hip flexors. Might be helpful to explain to everyone what hip flexors are.
Hip flexors, they're responsible for flexing your hips. So having your legs bent. So how they are when you're sitting, basically. And your hamstrings are the muscles which attach at the back of the legs, they attach to the back of the knee and your sitting bones. So when you sit up on your sit bones, your hamstrings are in a resting position. Your hip flexors will be switched on, but not, they won't be overly contracting or lengthening. They're okay. Problems arise because we tend to sit for too long without moving.
Right.
But also, if we sit, for example, with our bottoms tucked under, so, you know, as the day goes on and you find yourself sort of tucking your bum under and resting against the back of your chair, then that changes how much the front and the back of the legs are working. So hip flexors then will be constantly under pressure, so they'll become overworked, and the hamstrings will become, well, for want of a better word, a bit lazy.
Right.
So that's sort of where most issues arise when people sit a lot. So you want to do things actually that counteract those positions. Hamstring stretching feels great and it is lovely. It's nice. And you can do it seated, but better still would be hamstring strengthening. And actually a great exercise which does both, and again, you've probably done it on the floor in Pilates, you'll have to stand up for this one. So if you stand
Well,
up,
if you just talk us through it, because I don't want to go too far from the mic.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So you're standing up. You stand on one leg. So stand on your right leg and bring your left knee so it's in line with your right knee.
Right.
Then you're going to put your hand on just underneath the left side of your bum, so at the top of your hamstrings, and that's for feedback. So you've got your knees lined up and you've got your hand on the top of your left leg at the back. And then you pulse your knee backwards. So it goes behind the right knee and then back to the right knee. And you're pulsing back from where your hand is. So you're pulsing back from your lower glute, so the lower bit of your bum, and the top of your hamstrings. So that's
so you're on one leg, and you're pulsing the other leg back.
Yes, but you're doing it with your from where your hand is, because what will happen otherwise, potentially, is if you're someone with an overworked lower back, your lower back will try to do the kicking back. So you'll kick back from by moving your back, and you want to you hone in on moving from the hamstrings, so then your hips will extend, which is the opposite of flexing. So the hip flexors will be extending. Yeah.
Okay, brilliant.
Hopefully you can follow that and give it a go.
Okay, well, that's some absolutely great advice. Now, you mentioned earlier the importance of having your computer at eye level, for example, to stop yourself slouching. Are there any sort of practical changes that we can apply, particularly if we're working at home? Because in the office, there's often sort of ergonomic chairs and laptop stands and all the right things, but not often at home. So any clever suggestions to help with things that might make a difference?
So I've got laptop stands, and you can pick those up from Amazon fairly inexpensively, or you could stack your laptop up on books, maybe to bring them up to eye height.
Mine's on dictionaries.
Yeah, so exactly. Obviously, if you type a lot, then you'd want to get a freestanding keyboard as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then also, if you can mix up how you position yourself, that's great. So maybe working at a desk, maybe sitting on the floor, if you can sit up on your sit bones. If not, you could put cushions under your bottom, maybe standing for a bit. I did an article in lockdown for the Sunday Times. They interviewed journalists within their team, and someone was using an ironing board to work on. I thought that was really good because you can alter the height of an ironing board.
Yeah.
So you can use something like that as a standing.
That is clever. Mine's a bit rickety though, but I think, you know, a good one, that would definitely work well.
Exactly. You've got those fitness balls. Maybe that doesn't personally work for me, but I've got clients who use fitness balls, and it really, you know, the big sort of.
Yes, I have a Swiss ball actually. It was advised to me by a physio about 10 years ago when I had some lower back problems, and it made a huge difference.
Yeah, it's made a huge difference for clients. And then recently I've been sent a MoveMate, which is, it looks a bit like a skateboard, really. You stand on it and you can move your ankles and your feet. And it's quite cool, actually. It's an American product. It's just arrived. So I'm just giving it a go, and I'm testing it out on one for one clients when they come. But
excellent. Well, really, I look forward to hearing more about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, we're coming to the end, so just a couple of quick questions to wrap up. First of all, importantly, where can people find out more about you, Kerri-Anne, and the work that you do?
My website is pilatesatyourdesk.com, and that has all of my options for individuals and workplaces on there. And then I've got Instagram at pilatesatyourdesk. And then I've also got a book called Move More at Your Desk, which you can find on Amazon. Yeah, and that's probably about it.
Okay, well, that sounds like plenty. It is a great book, everybody, I will say. It's called Move More at Your Desk, Increase Your Energy at Work and Reduce Shoulder, Back and Neck Pain by Kerri-Anne Bradley. I would urge you to take a look at it. Now, I'll be sure to put links to all of those in the show notes so everyone can find you and the book easily. If you've got good feedback about that MoveMate thing, then send a link and I'll pop that in the show notes as well.
Amazing. Thank you.
So before we wrap up, top two tips from you for we women in midlife who want to move more, what should we do?
Do things that make you smile. So if you do movements that make you happy, you're more likely to do them. That's number one. And number two, go and work with a teacher who knows what they're doing so that you move from the right place and you don't hurt yourself.
Brilliant. That's great advice. Kerri-Ann, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Jackie.
Goodness me, I'm already sitting up taller and straighter. It's really very interesting how just small tweaks can make such a difference. If you'd like to find out more about Kerri-Ann, her online programmes, her corporate workshops, or her new book, Move More at Your Desk, I've put all the links on the show notes, which you can find on the podcast page of my website, well-well-well.co.uk. And if you want some targeted nutrition advice to support your exercise program and relieve your menopause symptoms, check out The Happy Menopause, Smart Nutrition to Help You Flourish, which is available in all the usual places. If you've enjoyed the podcast, don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. And please give it a 5-star rating and a short review on Apple Podcasts or whichever platform you listen on. I'd be so grateful. And do tell your friends and family about it too. It really does make a huge difference to the visibility of the podcast, so that more women can find the show. After all, every woman deserves to have a happy menopause. Thanks so much for listening. Bye for now.